we're very pleased today to have Shuk-Tung Yang from Harvard University, who will talk about complex manifolds with force.
Okay, fantastic. Let's talk about. Such an object called complex manifold. There are two reasons I was interested in this subject. One is from heterotic string, that there was a system equation that Andy Strominger wrote down about 20 years ago, which I always curious whether it can be solved or not. And the second reason is I'm always interested in complex manifolds which are not scalar, because I want to see what the difference are. In the case of two-dimensional complex manifold, we pretty much understand which complex manifolds are not scalar. It's not completely classified, but it's more close enough to be classified. But in dimensions bigger than two, complex dimensions bigger than two, there are huge amount of non-scalar complex manifold that we don't understand. So in order to understand a complex manifold which has no scalar structure, we like to put some structure, geometric structure over it in order that we can understand such geometry. The only natural system that I can think about the system that come up from Strominger's equations, as far as I can tell. We can try to come up with many other unnatural, I won't say unnatural, mathematical structures, but so far the experience tell us physicists somehow have better intuition on this than us. So we would like to follow what is going on. Now this takes a lot of work to be able to do this, for me at least. It's an important question in differential equation, partial differential equations. So anyway, let me start off from this. Scalar geometry is important and useful because the group, not holomorphic group, holonomic group, is a UN, and the most important part is the Laplacian operator commute with the projection, and therefore the Hodge field works, and the Hodge field works is the basic for all the scalar geometry, and the important part is that the scalar form, as I wrote down here, is a constant, covariant constant. And the Calabi-Yau manifold has a little bit more, namely, besides the metric being constant, there also has an N form, holomorphic N form, that is covariant constant. This corresponds to the statement that a holonomic group is SUN. S means it preserves a volume form. And this means the canonical Lie bundle is trivial. And in this case, the spin-offs can be identified with differential forms. I will code it a bit fast here. We have two pair of spin-offs, and these are very interesting and create many interesting structures in algebraic geometry, namely meter symmetry and several other things, which I will not get into detail into doing it, saying all about it. Now let's come back to these statements. The Calabi-Yau manifolds, so far we still believe they only find a number of deformation, although Dave Morrison said that he sees no reason. But my gut feeling is that this is still be true. They only finite number. Finite number in the sense of deformation type. So the topological type should be finite. The reason I form personally for myself is because if you take the case where the Ricci curve is positive, then it's finite. And this is a borderline case, and all the indications says that the L2 norm or the curvature and all that seems to be well controlled, and I would rather believe that there are only finite number of them. So now the question is how to understand them. Well, an important construction was proposed by Herb Clemens and followed up by Freeman. So Freeman, Robert Freeman in Columbia, he told me, we actually call it the construction of Clemens. Anyway, Clemens did the following thing. He took a rational curve in the quintic, actually. But you can do it for general Calabi-Yau manifold, whose normal bundle is special, O minus 1 plus O minus 1. And so it's negative, negative normal bundle. Such a curve can be contracted to a point. And the point is a singularity called rational double point. So it's a very simple singularity, it's summation xi squared equals 0. It's like a cone. Well, physics call it coniform singularity. And then Freeman proposed a condition. You can shrink more than one rational curve, and you need more than that. And the condition for the manifold, after you shrink to a singular point, how to deform such a singular manifold to be a smooth manifold. So you move the manifold and smooth out the singularity. Okay. And, well, if you blow down enough rational curves, the second cohomology of the original Calabi-Yau manifold will be completely killed. And so no more second cohomology there. And we end up with a complex manifold, which is not Kähler. It's not Kähler because no second homology, which is necessary condition for Kähler manifold. And it's diffeomorphic to a connex sum of S3 cross S3. So this is a rather beautiful topology because it's like a two-dimensional Riemann surface, which is a connex sum of S1 cross S1. Now it's S3 cross S3. Okay. And, well, suppose we expect a finite number of deformation type of Calabi-Yau manifold. You expect there only finite number of S3 cross S3 appear. So the point is, there's a close connection from different class of Calabi-Yau that can go to such manifolds, S3 cross S3. And many years ago, about 15 years ago, Miles Rhee in England, conjecture. I think he does not want to say it's a conjecture, but anyway, we say it's a conjecture. Because he was not so sure about it. One can connect any Calabi-Yau free manifold to another one, tunnel through such a conformal transitions, through the connection of S3 cross S3. So although all the Calabi-Yau manifolds are kind of different topological type, one hopes that one can always tunnel through such a construction. And the medium is S3 cross S3. This is a nice picture and can be checked in many cases due to Tristan Hopes and Paul Green and Candelas. They check it for complete intersections. So that was pretty nice. However, for this manifold, S3 cross S3 connection, there's no geometry we can say of. We just know there's a complex structure, and that's all. And, well, there's a holomorphic free form also. So the question is how to understand the geometry of such a complex manifold so that I can tunnel from one geometry, namely a Calabi-Yau geometry, to another one. Yeah.
So if you're talking about connecting Calabi-Yaus through these things, so these are singular. So the metric is singular on these spaces, but the topology is smooth?
Well, when you collapse, everything is singular at the beginning, but then you can smooth it out.
And you smooth it out to one of these S3 cross S3?
Yeah, then the manifold is non-singular.
Right, but is it Calabi-Yau? It's not
Calabi-Yau. It's not Calabi-Yau. It's not Kähler.
It has a holomorphic freeform.
Yeah, it has a holomorphic freeform.
But it doesn't have a Kähler.
I see. So the Calabi-Yaus are connected. I mean, they're connected to these other
non-Kähler
things.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, two Calabi-Yau can all go down the same guy and kind of join to each other. That's basically it. Okay. So these are complex structure, complex manifold with no Kähler structure. There's a opposite construction that I did later with Thomas, Richard Thomas and Smith, where we collapse S3. We take a Lagrangian S3 and we collapse it, and come back is S2, P1. It's a corner for transition. One way is collapse S2 and create S3. You can reverse it, collapse S3 and create S2. In that way, we construct symplectic manifold. So given a Calabi-Yau manifold, you can blow down S3 and construct symplectic manifold, which is diffeomorphic to CP3, connect some with CP3, etc. So that's a mathematical construction. Looks like this one is a symplectic manifold, one is a complex manifold. They somehow should be mirror to each other, but there's no physics behind it. Although the mathematics seems to be pretty tempting, because one collapses S2 and creates S3, and you can reverse collapse S3 and create S2. Okay. But there's no geometry to speed up at this moment until. That's why I want to look at this thing, this hadronic string introduced by Andy. No, not hadronic string introduced by Andy, I mean the equation. Okay. There are supersymmetry still exists. And there are four equations in Schrödinger system, which I will explain. And the important feature, which is not, Andy did not write it down so clearly, turns out is because of something called balance. So we are looking at a Hermitian metric, where you take omega squared, and d of it is equal to 0. So theta means d omega equals 0. Balance means d omega squared equals 0. This turns out was studied quite a few years ago, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I say, by several people, by mathematicians, and it was called balance metric at that time. I don't know why they call it balance metric, but they were interested in it just for its own sake. As a generalization of Kähler manifold, they look at this class of manifolds. Now, this class of manifold has some interest by itself, although not as much as we know about Kähler geometry. So first of all, exists a balanced metric with respect fiber bundle construction. So basically, if the fiber exceeds a balanced metric and the base admits a balanced metric, the total space would expect one under some mild condition. But the most important condition is that it respects bidirectional transformation. This is something rather amazing because it's not true for Kähler geometry. If you have a manifold bi-rational, that means you have a meromorphic mapping generically one-to-one from this manifold to another one, which admits a balanced metric, then this one admits also a balanced metric. This is a statement which is not true for projective geometry and not true for Kähler geometry, but true for balanced metric. So this is a rather interesting statement. Okay, so we believe this is a good class of manifold, and we want to understand how to deal with them. Okay. So let's see how Andy come up with this class of things that I'm going to talk about. So at the beginning, of course, the famous paper in 1984 by four physicists, Candelas, Horowitz, Stromberg, and Witten, they took the compactification for string theory to be the metric product of a maximum symmetric four-dimensional space-time, which we can just take to be Minkowski space-time, and the six-dimensional Calabi-Yau. And one identified the Young-Mills connection with the SU3 connection of the tangent bundle, and the delay time will be constant in that case. Later, at that time, I just proved my theorem with Wundt about Hermitian Young-Mills connections. So the high-rank bundle is then used, and can be used to identify SU4 and SU5 bundle. And then, instead of Schrödinger, then use Trish product, walked product, instead of metric product, where D would be said to be constant. So you put a Trish product for the 10-dimensional compactification. And K would be, originally was a Calabi-Yau, but if you use this twisting where D could depend on Y, then you will find out something more general than Calabi-Yau space. So D would be, turns out would be a dilaton field. And so the symmetry is still there because the symmetry X on X independent of Y. So it's still there. And then he come out with, he looked computer supersymmetric configuration. And we just write down the what you need for supersymmetry. So these are standard equations that you write down. And then you redefine the unknown. So, well, for physics, who knows it knows better than me. So for my physician who doesn't know it, doesn't matter, really. So anyway, so you redefine the field, and I will come up with the equation that I need to solve. So you redefine spin off and the metric, and it sets a better equation of this time, where H is going to be a free form, which is important. The point is that from all the spin knots, one construct a there's a connection which relates to H. H is not zero in this case. It's going to be a free form, defining a connection. And from there, we can define, from the spin knots eta, which is covariant constant, one defines a complex, almost complex structure. And the important point is that this almost complex structure would be integrable, this covariant constant. So this would be covariant constant, almost complex structure. And it will be set, because of this equation, it will satisfy the torsion, the Nyehausen torsion tensor is trivial. So this J will be integrable. So therefore, we get a complex manifold, integrable complex structure from the covariant constant spin-off field. And then we can define the Taylor form by this equation. And H is going to be a free form, which satisfies this equation. And there also exists a holomorphic N form coming from the spin-off using the gamma matrix. And it turns out from all the derivatives, from the procedure, that the dilaton would satisfy this equation, that phi minus that is a constant. So at the very end, we come up with these four equations. That's what I want to deal with. Okay. So, we come up with these four equations, 1, 2, 3, 4. So what does this 1, 2, 3, 4 mean? Now, for mathematicians who are not happy with spin-offs, we can forget about it now. We just look at these four equations. So what does this mean? We have a vector bundle coupling with the manifold. And this vector bundle emits a connection, a metric, Hermitian metric on there, which satisfies these two equations. These two equations means F, being the curvature of the bundle, is Hermitian-Young-Mills. It is holomorphic bundle because this one is equal to 0. There's 2CO and CO2 power equal to 0. And it's Hermitian-Young-Mills. The first trend graph will be 0. And these are satisfied Hermitian-Young-Mills connections. Okay? So 1 and 2 simply says that the bundle we should have is a Hermitian-Young-Mills connection. And this number 4, actually, we shall see is equivalent to say that it's equivalent to supersymmetry existence, but also equivalent to say that the metric omega is balanced metric, conformally balanced metric. Okay? And this number 3 equation is the anomaly equation. So the curvature of the bundle is the second churn form of the bundle minus second churn form of the manifold. The difference is equal to dH. H is d bar minus d omega. So this number equation 3 come out from the statement that we have chose. We have choose the form H. See, we choose H to be this. So I take D of this H, it would be dd bar of omega. That's how you come up with dH equal to this, the second transform, different to second transform. So now we have four equations that appears, and these are the systems we are interested in to solve. Okay? So what is the, so let me repeat the mathematics that we need to deal with. I get a vector bundle. Let me just write it down here. So given a vector bundle over a manifold, it's a complex free manifold now, and it should be stable, algebraically stable with respect to some Hermitian form omega squared. Okay? That's a condition for 1 and 2 to be true. That's a necessary condition that we need. And a holomorphic free form over M. So holomorphic and not zero. So these are the conditions. So condition 1, condition 2 has to be there. Okay? And then number 3 is d omega square is conformally, this number 4 equation actually is equivalent to this equation. So maybe instead of the equation 4 here is equivalent to this equation, turns out. But if I say it a little differently, as a given data, I would just say that omega square is closed at this moment. So this omega is not the same as omega. Maybe I'll put it here. Tilde here. Okay? So omega tilde is a Hermitian form. So the statement is that these are the data that are given to you. A complex manifold with a holomorphic form such like this, and a balanced metric, and also a vector bundle. So these are free data. And then the conjecture or the statement we want to prove is then that there exists a metric on a vector bundle and an omega which make this whole four equation to be satisfied. Okay? So that's a conjecture. Well, Dandy did not say it, but I say it. 1, 2, 3 are given data to you. And I want to say that as a result, you can prove this false statement. Now, this is far away from being known to be true. And this is a project I'd like to deal with. Okay? Now, at the point when Andy wrote down this equation, he did not have a non-singular solution. He has some solution in some special case in terms of current. So the goal now is to see how we can solve this system of equations. Now, of course, there's a string tangent here, alpha here, okay. So we're solving it as a one loop term. Anyway, now, so I hope I really remember these four equations, and I will deal with it step by step. So first of all, let us try to understand how to deal with this equation in a simple case first. The first simple case is I take this data, I take a simple thing. I assume M is Calabi-Yau. So I take omega to be Kähler, omega tilde to be Kähler, and I take the vector bundle to be the tangent bundle plus some non-trivial alpha plus a trivial Lie bundle, several copies of it. I take this simple case. Now, of course, in this case, I can just take the simple solution, namely the metric that come out from Ritchie Fred metric on the Calabi-Yau manifold. All those four equations will hold because 1 and 2 is automatic because the tangent connection is Hermitian mu, and this will be automatic because left hand side is 0 and the right hand side is the same. So everything holds. So therefore, you can say that in this case, everything holds. Now then, what we want to do is a simple argument But it's not as trivial as what I thought at the beginning. Namely, I do a perturbation, which all physicists know how to do. Namely, I perturb from this statement and try to prove that it exists. Now, it takes a little bit skill to do it. The reason is this, and let me explain to you. So, the reason is there's a choice in doing perturbation. Namely, there's, well, let's just take one parameter first. Take this one O. There's a choice of metric here plus a metric here, up to a constant. Namely, I can multiply T by constant and O by constant. There are two parameters, constants, involved here. So the perturbation encounters some difficulty because of the kernel there. The kernel and that caused some trouble for perturbation theory. So we did a little bit, we made a simple observation to make it to work. So let's take a more general situation. So we want to deform the connection to the product case. So suppose I have a one parameter family of holomorphic vector bundle over a fixed Calabi-Yau manifold, and we want to see the connection to be extended smoothly. Okay, so we want to make the connection to be solved smoothly. But since the x naught, the point where we deform from is a product, is a dilation bundle, d1 pi and d2 2 pi. And there are two metrics, as I said, h1, h2 involved. And so the dilation connection is involved two metrics. We have to have a choice. There's a kernel involved. So the first thing we observe is that there's a canonical choice of this constant. Namely, this t is ambiguous, is forced to be a fixed one by the bundle, by the complex structure. Turns out we can fox it to be some special number. And that solved the problem that we want. So let me tell you exactly how it comes out. So tangent bundle plus O is a dilation bundle. E1 plus EJ, we call it I, EIEJ. The deformation for bundles is given by H1 of endomorphism of E, so E star tensor E. It decomposes as a matrix, so EI star tensor EJ. And this K is a account for the first order deformation of the bundle as a complex structure. And we observe that in case of off-diagonal term is non-zero, then, in fact, there's a unit T, so that for S of infinity small, the T can be extended. Okay, so the the twisting of the bundle when you deform it forks the choice of T. Okay, so we destroy the kernel in this way. This is a key for the deformation theory. After that, I think mathematicians or physicists know how to do the rest. But anyway, so as I said, the fourth equation has a nice form, namely it satisfies a conformal balance condition. So you multiply by the norm of omega, and it turns out to be nice. So this allows one to construct quite a lot of solutions to Strominger's system perturbatively. So let me not go into more detail how to do it. So in general, you can take more Lie bundles instead of just O. You can take more. Then you can construct a large sum of those bundles. So let me write down the solution. Okay, the statement. So this is a case when you have tangent bundle plus O, and if the twisting, when you deform the complex structure over E, as far as the twisting is good, then you can solve the equation, but we do need, for some funny reason, that we need to do the large radius limit in the perturbation field. That means the omega, the Hermitian form that we deal with, has to be big for the argument for us to work. So it's still, for some reason, the large radius limit has to be there, even for this perturbation argument. Okay. Now you can generalize this one to more general case, and instead of one bundle, one line bundle, you can do tiny bundle plus many copies of trivial line bundle. Then this becomes a low vector and a column vector. You want them to be linear independent. So interesting, they are in H1 XT star and H1 of this star. There's some mistake here. So anyway, this is T and this T star. And if they are linear independent, then we can also solve the equation. So there are many examples of this. For example, in the case of a quintet, you can construct extension by taking this big diagram with, you know, the quintet is sitting in complex projective space, coson is a hyperplane bundle, tensor to the power 5, and you can construct this extension, OX, FTX, and this is a non-trivial extension. You can make use of that to construct a Schrödinger system over this F. So therefore, we can solve it in that case. So if you have smooth quintet, omega indicator form, then for large C, you can construct such a system. And you can do it for practically all the Calabi-Yau manifold we know. And so there's no problem. Now, the problem is this, that the manifold we do is a Kähler manifold in the background, so there's not too much difference from Kähler structure and all that. The first non-trivial, really non-trivial result is the non-Kähler manifold. So this was a construction that due to Fu, is a postdoc of mine from China. The first non-Kähler manifold we construct. So the manifold itself does not emit any Kähler metric. So this is a good test about the conjecture. The manifold itself is not hard to construct. Was the construction procedure was due to Ekman and Calabi, actually. It's called Calabi-Ekman construction. But then it was adapted by this later author for a more explicit construction. So let me, so the reference are here, several people. And so let me tell you what the bundle we are looking at. So the manifold on the base is a K-free surface. You can do it for any Calabi-Yau manifold, non-compact or compact. And what you do is that you choose two light bundles over the KP surface, where the omega 1, omega 2 are the curvature form of this light bundle, and we want to make it to be anti-surface 1-1 form, which there are plenty of them. And then we construct a vibration over the KP surface S, where the fibers are S1 cross S1. So how do you get this vibration? Well, each light bundle has a circle bundle associated to it, the principal circle bundle. You just take these two circle bundles and multiply the circle by circle, you get toroid. So you get toroid bundle over S. And this bundle turns out to be non-Kähler. One can prove that. And it's a rather interesting manifold because the total space emits a holomorphic free form, and the moduli is fixed for the toroid, so it's locally trivial fiber bundle. But nonetheless, the total space is globally non-trivial. It's locally trivial, but globally non-trivial bundle. So now what do you do? So I'm describing to you a procedure to solve the problem of Schrödinger. So what we do is that the carriage form omega 1 and omega 2 can be written locally as d alpha 1, d alpha 2, this connection form. You can write this abelian gauge group, complex Lie bundle. And the fiber T2, we write dx plus pi star and dy plus pi star alpha 2. So these are globally defined one form on the total space. These are globally defined because this is on the principal bundle, so to speak. So we get these two globally defined one form on the total space of the bundle. And we call this, we complexify it, so we get this this coordinate of this one form, which is now globally defined on the complex free manifold. And we have a Hermitian form on the total space by simply using the KV surface metric, which is Richard flat plus this fellow. The holomorphic free form is simple, you just use the two form from KV surface vector theta. And you see, it's very easy to check this equals zero. One important observation is that, although it's not hard observation, but it's an important one, I conformal change my KV surface metric. This equation will satisfy, this metric will satisfy this equation for all u. Okay? So the advantage is that we get a function, a freedom there. And this freedom allows us to solve the anomaly equation. Equation free that I wrote down earlier. So you write down this omega u. And then you write down the condition for equation free. So you see, the last equation was the equation we said it should always be true. Now we are trying to attack the equation free. Okay? So equation free, you write down, you want to compute the curvature, you write down the holomorphic, some one form. According to here, I write down omega 1 to the d bar of theta and omega to the d bar of another one. And then I form this B, this vector. Complex vector. And then using that, I can write down the second transform of the curvature given by the metric I wrote down. So for the Hermitian metric, I write down the second transform. This is the second transform come from the KV surface, and this is rest that contributed by U. So the equation, the anomaly equation, is number three in this system, we call Schrödinger system, is then equivalent to this. So this is the second transform that comes out from here. But then the left-hand side, d bar omega, turns out come up with this norm omega 1 squared plus norm omega 2 squared. Omega 1 and omega 2 are the curvature form of the two Lie bundles. So this is a equation have this property, it's defined over the KV surface. We are now choosing U to be a function on the base manifold only. The right hand side depends only on the KV surface, and the left hand side also depends only on KV surface. But the left hand side is a closed form. So as a result, the right hand side must be closed. And this gives you a constraint of what kind of property you can use. This comes up to give the following statement. Because for a stable bundle, which may have a Hermitian connection, this must be bigger than equal zero. So we obtain a statement that we can solve Schrödinger system using Toyman over T4. This was a, that what I want to write down here because there was a mistake made before. The mistake was made because Andy wrote his equation with an opposite sign. And and there was Chad Feiner, he agreed that it was an opposite sign made. You can tell what's the problem. So, what happens is this. There's a tension here in front of these two guys. And, well, somehow you compute it to be negative instead of this way. And if you take negative, then you get into a bad situation because, well, then it is easy, not bad. I mean, 10 things, no constraint. But if it's positive like this, then this guy, which is fixed with this 10 equal to, if the baseband will toroid, this one will be 0. This will be 0, then both this has to be 0, because minus minus, all is a positive term. Okay? If this happens to be 0, this is 0, integral to be 0. So this will be 0, this will be 0, this will be 0. Everything is trivial. This cannot, well, that's why the toroid does not satisfy this equation. So the Iwasawa manifold, which was thought to solve the system, actually did not solve the system. It solved the system with negative tensors, with negative string tensor. Okay, yeah.
So in terms of your conjecture over here, you're saying that it's not true in general because we need some assumption that we don't have a torus to start with or something?
Not necessarily. There's no confidence with that conjecture, actually, because there's a quite a chosen the bundle in that way. I think the story is a little complicated. Maybe I can talk with you after. Okay. Anyway, now this is important because this otherwise it will be contradict to some kind of duality, string duality problem. So we are pretty happy to resolve this situation. Anyway. So let's, I need to solve this equation, okay? I need to prove to you how to solve this equation. Okay, I need to tell you how to solve this. Okay, remind you there's an alpha here. When alpha is negative, the equation can be solved. But it's not interesting for string theory, that's all I should say. Okay, you get negative tensor. So alpha negative can be solved, but it's not you don't get an equation that you want you are interested in. Okay. Now, so I want to find a U which makes this equation to hold. Okay. If I find a U that satisfies this equation, then I solve all the equations that Schrödinger has. Because the way that Hermitian-Young-Mills bundle the first two equations is invariant under conformal multiplication, which we do. Okay, so I need only solve number one in order to solve the equation. Well, so in order to solve it, we observe, first of all, we have to choose. In order to make the condition to be consistent, we have to make sure the bundle is chosen to satisfy all this property. And this is a topological condition, 24 minus C2E and equal that. And this is a topology condition, give a constraint of what kind of bundle you can choose, and what kind of torus bundle you can choose, because these are positive and these are positive, and we give some condition for it. Right? And so there are only finite number of these solutions that are associated to this whole thing. Because the 24 is finite, And all these things give a constraint on the bundle that you can choose. This bundle constrains the second chain class and constrains omega 1 and omega 2. Okay? So there are only finite number of possibilities in that way. Okay. Now once you do that, you are reduced to solve the problem in the following way. So once the topological condition which is necessary holds, so basically, if there's an obvious condition that has to satisfy for Schrödinger system, namely, instead of a topological condition I just mentioned, Then you can rewrite the equation in the following way. Well, it's the same thing. When mu satisfies integral mu equals 0. Just rewrite that topological constant, integral mu equals 0. And then I can rewrite the equation, the whole equation in the following manner. The equation is given to number 3. Mu is something given to you, so that integral mu is equal to 0. U is a function that I need to look for. So this whole equation on U. And let me just, in order to make the equation a little bit more understandable, let me make a simple a special case. Assuming the second Lyman omega 2 is a multiple omega 1, then this form looks better, and it becomes this equation, the equation I want to solve. So this equation on the KV surface, on the, and F is given, and mu is given. And such that integral mu is equal to 0. So the question is now the following question. Given two functions, one is F, one is mu, on the KV surface, we want to find U so that this equation holds. If we can find this U, then we can solve the equation. Okay, so that's the problem. And this actually is very similar to the proof of the Calabi conjecture. But actually, this turns out to be more difficult somewhat. Of course, we learned from the proof the idea, so it's not too bad, although it's much more non-trivial. Now, the way that it comes out is this. We impose a condition on it, which so far does not appear. It's a nonlinear equation. It's impossible to solve a nonlinear equation. It's not elliptic, at least with the present technology that we know of, because the singularity problem, and if it's not elliptic, either it creates singularity or it's not finite dimensional solutions. We simply have no way to understand it. So what we did is that we impose a condition. We want the equation to be elliptic. So we linearize the equation, and we want the linearized operator to be elliptic. So this is a situation comes out in strong field. So for example, you take a curvature plus a metric. So this is on a light bundle, and you require determinant equal to 0 or something like this. You know, in the first order term, you get the Young-Mills equation, and then it's elliptic. But on the other, you want to get a high order term, it's no more elliptic. And this is a similar thing here. I'm accounting for high order term here. So I have to impose a condition to make it elliptic. So there, if the curvature is very large, you have to account for ellipticity as a whole. Okay. So here, we are doing the same thing. So we impose this condition. We impose this condition. Namely, I require that... this wrong side. Yes. I impose this condition. This is a metric that obtained by linearized the equation. I want this one to be positive, definite. Okay? So let me repeat again. I impose this condition because I want to make the equation elliptic. Therefore, I want to solve this equation within this class. Namely, I want to find a metric where this positive definite at the same time. So this is an interesting thing to do, to find the right ellipticity. And this can be done, and this turns out to be a very non-trivial argument, as I said. And I should so indicate to you how this works. And so that's the equation. You impose this elliptic equation. Turns out that in looking at this equation, there's always some question, ambiguity you want to look at. It turns out you can normalize a constant here in U. And we can put down this to be arbitrary constant for solving this equation also. And this A is a parameter we can impose. And we want to make A small. The reason to make A small is to make U large. In the integral sense, what does U large mean? I enlarge the base. You remember, the metric is such that on the base, I take exponential U. So this is a adiabatic limit. I'm taking the toroid on the fiber to be very small and make U to be large. So the base is big. And this gives rise to a interesting differential equation to be solved. And this is very complicated, as I said. So what do we do is, so let me tell you how this one is solved. Let's take this equation. So this is the equation we have. Now how do you solve this equation? Well, I put a parameter here. Put a t here and put a t here. Okay. The way that we solve it. Well, when t equals 0, we know how to solve this equation. Namely, u equals constant solve the equation. Okay? And, well, this is exactly how this thing ambiguity comes in. When t equals 0, there's a whole bunch of constants that solve the equation, not just one. Okay? The constant, there are many constants. So we restrict our function space to this. This one that we've done, minus 4u. To be a, to be constant, independent of t. In the space of all functions, I restrict it to this space. And I prove that I can move along. Namely, if u not satisfy this equation with this condition, u at time t naught, let's say, then I can find nearby. I can move del u t naught in the neighborhood of t naught. Okay. I can proceed by perturbation analysis that I can solve this same equation by t naught moving a little bit more. Still centered by this constraint. Okay? So perturbation analysis. Okay. And then what do I left to do? What am I left to do is that I want to prove that this can converge all the way. So this part is perturbation term, and then afterwards I have to prove everything converges. So this is a part of convergence. So basically, I want to control how u behave. I want to prove convergence. I want to choose this A that I wrote down there to be small, and I control u cannot be too small, in fact can be very large if A is small. That needs a proof. This proof is by rather complicated iteration argument, and I won't go into that, but people in dependent equation would appreciate it better. And then the second thing I need to do is to control the ellipticity. Omega pi is assumed to be positive, I need to control the determinant of this metric relative to the original metric. I need to prove it's the upper bound and it's the lower bound. And then, this is a major crux of the problem actually, and we take a lot of work to prove that, to control it. And so, it's this proposition. I need to make A to be really small, which I didn't have time to go into how, all these numbers there. But important thing is that I control the determinant from below. And this is the key. And this takes a lot of work to do, as I said, by measuring principle. And then, after that, we need to control the trace of omega pi, which is this guy, this barrel. And this we can control by similar to my proved Calabi conjecture, the prime maximum principle of this barrel. And I control the upper bound. And after that, I am pretty much control the whole thing. Ellipticity of the operator and lower bound and all that. And then one needs to one more estimate, the third order estimate, which is somewhat complicated. Let me not get into that. We apply the measurement principle to control the third order estimate. But it's difficult so on the last part, but it's not hard in the sense that we know what we try to do. The difficult part is the determinant estimate. Now let me tell you what this space looks like. This space is non-scalar, which we can tell. H01 and H10 are different. In scalar manifold, they are supposed to be the same. So the first Bending number can be computed, and second Bending number can be computed. These are KV surfaces, you can compute all of them. And so KV surface is 0, and this 0, and this 0. And this is 22. So you write them down. So the construction of this manifold being a toroid bundle over KV. Now there's a duality statement to support these things. But recently, Alan Adams has a well-seed discussion about this model. And we are trying to work out more general situation, and this is the situation. So far, we are discussing over KV. We are doing T2 to be locally trivial, but we should be able to allow T2 to be non-trivial. That means we can take a manifold over P1 cross P1 or other del Pezzo surface with positive chain cast and some elliptic curve where it's twisting around, and also construct a non-scalar structure over here, set to a similar equation. I think this can be done, but we have not really finished yet, so I won't say it for sure. At the beginning, Alan thought that it cannot happen, but it looks like there's some mistake in his argument. So I think it's true that you can allow the elliptic curve to change the moduli. And we try to interpret all these models, both in terms of well-seed and also, this is a nice differential equation, as I said, and but I have to say, there are many more things that we don't know. Namely, we find answers to solve the equation, but we have no idea whether this is the only answers, even locally. In other words, for the manifold that I construct here, if I perturb our equation around the one that we have, I'm not sure we get all the things, all the solution already, because I assume a special answer to solve it. Whether this special answer exhausts all possibility, actually I'm not so sure. I think it should be true, but I could not prove it. Here we are dealing with a large system, four equations. There are in general just way too many solutions to handle, and I couldn't tell. But I believe it is unique within that, at least locally. And this by itself is an interesting question in dependent equations. that you have a large system and you find good answers to solve it, are there? Do they give you all of them? And globally, I don't even have any idea. So the Calabi conjecture was able to tell you globally and all kinds of possibilities. You can globally parameterize all the solutions. Here we don't have a similar good luck because we are dealing with a big system and we don't have a clue at this moment. But at least I'm happy that we can prove that this can be solved in some important case that puzzles me for a long time. So I'll stop here.
Back to the original
statement.
So I want to be completely clear. It is known, for example, that the generalized conical transitions that involve non-Taylor manifolds. Do we actually know at this point that it's got geometric structural isometries, or that would follow from these conjectures?
There are two or three times I thought I can solve that problem already, but I'm still not sure. I think it exists.
Okay.
But it's much more tricky than what I thought.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I believe it exists, and I, as I said, I thought several times I did it already, but I won't claim it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you should be there.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So your sort of result about the torus, you said
yeah.
If you start with a four torus, and you look at tori bundles over it or something.
Yeah.
You say that you can't solve the Schrödinger equations in that case.
Right. Yeah. You need to control the you need to satisfy the topological condition I wrote down there. The point is, the topological condition is not satisfied, so it's not there. It depends on the size of alpha, the string tensor. It's ironic enough, if you take alpha to be minus 1, the whole thing is much easier to solve and far, far more easier to solve. And when alpha is positive, it becomes very tricky and complicated, and maybe that's how nature is supposed to be. Take some work to work it out.
You left out the, so in the end of your notes, you have the
Well, there's also RN atoms and where we sit.
So the question is.